From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective. That means balance in body, mind, and spirit. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And that means, how long are you going to keep sitting on your pain and stuffed emotions and fears and hold yourself back in life because that's what you're doing, and keeping yourself a prisoner of your memories, of your past, of your fears of the future? And so we're going to be talking today about our past and how it relates to today. And basically, we're going to be talking about preteens. And my guest, who I'll be introducing shortly, is Patty Hansen, who's the author and editor of Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul. And in reading this book, I've read most of it, actually, I realized that if you're listening and you don't have preteens, please don't turn the show off right now because you think this is not going to relate to you. Because as I was reading this book, what I came to realize is, as a therapist and as a human being and an adult, what gets most people into therapy is what went on during their preteen years. And it became very interesting to me as I'm reading this how many of my clients I need to suggest or assign reading Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul, because what it did for me, there were actually sections of this book that as I read them, I had tears in my eyes, and it was rekindling and recharging certain memories and certain periods in my life that, for me, like many people, those preteen years were not exactly the best years of my life, the happiest years of my life. You know, it was a struggle. I was an overweight kid, and the preteen years are kind of like those in-between years for most kids. It's like the forgotten period, the ignored group. You're no longer that cute little kid, as much as you may try to be, and you're not quite given the resources and the privileges of being a teenager, and you don't have the attention that most teenagers get or demand. So a lot of preteens feel, in a sense, invisible. And this is what this book really addresses, and something I really came to respect and appreciate. So for those of you that are listening, remember that what we're talking about today is not necessarily just the preteens of today. We're talking about who you were as a preteen. We're talking about the parts of you that still need healing that are connected to those that period when you were a preteen. Or maybe you are the parent of teenagers, young children. Today's show can help you really understand a little bit more about that period in your own kids' lives, and if you do have preteen kids, definitely stay tuned to this. So I'm going to read one piece here, and this is actually on the introduction page on Chapter 6 called On Changes, and it was written by a 12-year-old named Alexandria Robinson. In a world filled with changes each and every day, I feel like I'm judged for what I do and say. I remember back to Barbies and play days in the park when I didn't worry about other people's remarks. But looking in the mirror, I see, to my surprise, a completely different person staring deep into my eyes. The carefree little child I saw at 4 and 5 has now become a preteen, learning to survive. The key word here is all of us can relate to the word survival. But if you think about that invisible group that group of awkwardness. They're prepubescent, or as with some preteens, they're already starting puberty. Whether it's girls getting their menstrual cycles, or boys beginning to grow hair and their voices drop and things like that. I mean, you know, I took my first shave when I was 12 years old. It was like 3 months before my bar mitzvah. And so everybody's different and everybody's struggling with different things. And that's what Patty Hansen has done by putting this book together. And Patty, I want to welcome you to the show today.
Thank you, Stuart.
Are you there?
Here, yeah.
Oh, good. Thanks for taking the time on your Saturday to do this.
Oh, gosh, I'm really impressed with everything you've said.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, we got a little feedback there. What got you into these chicken soup series? How did you get involved with this, and what was your motivation actually for getting into the preteen soul?
I got into the series originally by marriage, actually. My husband, Mark, is best friends with Jack Canfield, and the two of them had cooked up this idea to end the stories that they end all their motivational speeches with, to put those in a book. And that process actually took them about 3.5 years to put together the very first book, and I worked with them alongside of them, making suggestions and reading stories. And I told them then that I wanted to do a book for kids. And as the book series grew and it became more popular, it became ever more evident to me that it was very important that kids had a chicken soup book of their own that really addresses the issues that they face in their lifetime. And I felt that preteens were the right age group, that this is a time when personalities are coming out and forming, and kids are looking to the outside world for information, which I wanted to be able to give them access to information in the chicken soup books, because it gives them an uplifting idea about life in general, humanity in general, instead of some of the things that my kids were asking me to see, you know, watch on television and stuff at that time. And I had kids at that age group, so it just was, for me, it was a perfect fit.
And as you were pulling this together, what was it doing for you?
It made me realize how out of touch we are as parents and adults with our preteen kids. And maybe it goes back to what you were talking about, that we overlook those preteen years of our own and think, oh, well, we got over it. And we kind of are out of touch with the stretches that we went through during that period of time. And it brings it home to you when you read literally thousands and thousands and thousands of stories and letters from kids that are going through the issues that they face during these years.
I mean, you just said something that I didn't know about. I mean, you must have had thousands of entries into this. How did you possibly read through all those and narrow it down to the ones? How did you pick the ones that you picked for the books? I know the one that's out right now is Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul 2. So you have two volumes for preteens.
Right.
But even after they came out, I'm assuming people were reading it and still sending you more stories.
Oh, we get stories every single week. It never has ended. The first book we finished was Chicken Soup for the Kids Soul, and that came out in 98. And my writing partner, Irene Dunlap, and I worked on that one for about 2.5 years. I read 8,000 stories and submissions from kids.
8,000? Are you there, Patty? Okay.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Did we lose you for a minute there?
No, but there's a noise that's like
there
a
is,
feedback.
There is some feedback that I'm hearing. So, anyway.
So it went on from there. Once that book came out, then it inspired kids all over the world. I mean, we have sold probably close to 4 million of kids' soul books. And that inspired kids who read the book, of course, then to write to us their own story. And then from there, we did Preteen 1, which came out in 2000. and then Preteen 2 that just came out this year.
Well, I'd actually like to read, I tried to pick out a couple of short ones to read so we're not spending the whole time reading from it, but this was one that I personally related to, and it's in the section on changes, and it's called My Problem, and it's written by Alan Smith, who was 11 years old, and he goes to say, and maybe I won't read the whole thing, it's about two pages, I am an 11-year-old overweight boy. I have felt down in the dumps, felt bad about myself, felt left out and confused at one time or another over the past 4 years. I've been overweight since I was 3 years old. My mom, dad, brothers, and sisters all worked at different times, and they didn't realize that when they came home and ate at different times, I would eat with each one of them. No one realized what I was doing, what it was doing to me until I was overweight. When I started school, the kids made fun of me. They called me Fatso and Fatty Fatty 4x4. This made me feel sad, mad, and upset. Sometimes I wanted to hit them and tell them to leave me alone. Instead, I would walk away, and at times I would go home and cry with my mom. I never let anyone know this because they would just have teased me for it instead of realizing how much I was hurting. In sports, I was always picked last, making me feel like I couldn't do as well as the other kids. This, I believe, is part of the reason I don't enjoy sports very much. When I was 8, my mom and I joined TOPS, which means Take Off Pounds Sensibly, a weight loss support group. Since I've been in TOPS, I've learned to exercise, to count calories. While I was in TOPS, I became a division winner for weight loss for my age group. I was proud to be on stage for this, especially knowing part of my TOPS group was there to support me. I've also learned how great it is to have my family support my efforts as well. I try to give the same support either by talking to someone who has weight issues or by giving hugs to people who need them. Now I set small goals for myself one by one. I find that they are easier to achieve than the really big ones. They all add up to bigger change in my weight eventually. Seeing the success as I go has helped me to believe in myself more than ever before. Still following new ways of healthy eating can be really tough. Sometimes I just want to eat everything in sight. It's hard when we go out to eat or to go to functions where there is food. I know I can have some sort of whatever I want. I just need to watch how much I eat of it. Sometimes it doesn't seem fair being a kid and having to think about this. I think because of what I've been through, I am more aware of how a person with disabilities feels. I try to help others and talk to them in a way that shows them respect. I never want to hurt anyone's feeling the way mine have been hurt. My family and TOPS friends have taught me to treat people with respect. If I could say anything to people who make fun of others, it would be not to just look at the outside of a person. You should get to know them on the inside. Get to know them for who and what they are. Also, remember, if you can't say something nice about someone, don't say something at all. I might laugh at your joke about my weight, but inside I might be crying. That was written by Alan Smith, an 11-year-old. Now, the reason I picked that is because he described my 10 and 11-year-old years. I was the fat kid that got teased. I was the one that didn't get picked for the sports teams. I was the one that was crying inside most of the time and going home and crying because of the teasing. And like him, here at 11, he has this insight about how that experience made him a more sensitive human being. And I've always thought, even when I was 11, that I had a sensitivity to other people's feelings, and I believe it was a lot of that struggle that makes me the therapist I am today.
I totally agree with that.
You know, so what's amazing to me is here I am at, I'll be 55 years old next month, and I was reading this and tears were welling up in my eyes. The 11-year-old inside of me was active again. And the pride that I felt for Alan was pride that I also felt for myself when at 16 I put myself on a diet and took off 55 pounds.
Wow.
And so it's both sides of it. I mean, what really came through with this is kids that are so expressive of their own journey and kids that get the lesson and are able to communicate it as beautifully as Alan and so many others in this book do.
They're pretty amazing, aren't they?
Yes, and I mean, what do you say to parents who might tend to be oblivious to the struggles these kids are going to.
What do I say to parents that are oblivious to it?
Yeah.
Well, I think it depends on the situation and the parent and what it is that they're talking to me about. I mean, I think a lot of parents have the attitude that they know their kids and they know exactly what's going on in their lives. But I found out for myself that's not really the truth when I started doing these books because, as an example, I thought I pretty much knew what my kids' likes and dislikes were. And I think I was probably just projecting on them what I thought that they should like and dislike.
Uh-huh.
So when we started doing these books, and I would run a story by them and say, well, what do you think about this or what do you think about that story? I would think it's a great story, and they'd say, Mom, that's a really dumb story.
So your kids actually helped you edit this.
Oh, absolutely. The first one. And then I realized that in order to really get a feeling for this market and for these kids, that we would have to run it by more than just my kids. So we ended up actually having 600 kids vote on the book. So an average of 600 kids vote on every single story that we put up for voting, and they decide which of those. Usually we send out about 200 or so stories to these kids all across the country, and they narrow it down to the 100 stories that end up being in the book. So it's very true to who they are. All across the country, to the preteens, what they're facing, the issues that they're dealing with, and the issues that they deal with are not only the issues that you were talking about that you dealt with when you were a kid, or I might have dealt with about not being popular or something along those lines, but they deal with so much more. They deal with so much more. And one of the things that you sort of touched on was puberty coming on earlier. I think it's, the statistics are that there are 42% of girls have already started their periods by the time they've finished sixth grade. That, I mean, I think when you and I were kids, that was probably not the case.
So you actually think that something's going on societal-wise that's bringing these things on sooner?
I think that their physical changes are happening sooner. I think the kids are exposed to maturity. To mature things at a lot earlier age than you and I were.
Yeah.
I mean, to some extent, we were protected. They can sit in front of a television and watch how many thousands of murders per week on television.
Mm-hmm.
They know exactly what's going on in the wars that we're involved in. They know, you know, for instance, the front page of the paper today, a baby was cut out of a woman's stomach and was found, you know, the baby was found alive and the woman is dead. I mean, this is kind of stuff that our 10 and 11-year-olds look at every day. And I don't remember ever having that kind of exposure to anything when I was a kid. So the fact that our world has become smaller and they're exposed to more forces them to have more of a mature look at things than you and I did. They aren't allowed to be kids very much longer than about 10.
If that long.
So they're dealing with the things that you and I dealt with, and they're dealing with other things that have to do with our world today.
So you're saying the things that are going on emotionally to them are actually creating changes physically. I mean, this is certainly an argument for evolution.
Yeah,
you know,
it's not my territory, but
I know
it's happening, you know. That's all I can tell you is I know that it's happening.
Well, you know, I remember when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and I remember sitting in front of the TV for an entire week watching the whole event unfold in terms of the assassination, in terms of the funeral, in terms of everything else going on. And I think that was the first time that TV was really used to bring things to that of that magnitude into the home. And I think that's what you're saying is what kids are getting today on a daily basis.
It's on a daily basis.
It's not just the major events.
And it isn't, you know, of course, a lot of it is fantasy. You know, it's television shows are not all based in truth, but still developmentally at this age, they may know logically this is just a television show. But I don't think the subconscious mind can tell the difference yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just being exposed to this stuff over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So what it does, it tends to, I think it diffuses the sensitivity to some degree. And it creates kind of a layer over everything that goes on in their lives. It creates higher highs and lower lows than I think that you and I even experienced.
And I think they're walking around with the same anxiety most adults are walking around who are watching the news.
Oh, yeah.
Fear of danger and other things like that. Instead of the innocence of going to the park and play, they got to be aware when they go to the park that there's not glass buried into the sand.
Or that somebody's going to try and kidnap them.
Exactly.
Or that if they're at school, one of their classmates is not going to try and shoot them. Or, you know, that they're... whatever it is, you know, I mean, the Twin Towers is still something that's in kids' minds. They they hold on to those things. They have those anxieties that are overlaid on top of regular developmental changes that every normal human being goes through when they are reaching the preteen years, whatever that means to that particular kid.
Right.
You know, whether that starts happening at 9 or 13, they hit this time when they start looking to the outside world for answers. They want to pull away from their family a little bit more. They still want to be comforted, but they don't want to be told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they're dealing with their own physical changes, psychological and mental and emotional changes, and all of the dangers of the world are piled on top of that.
And at the same time, and this is something I think most adults don't realize or take seriously, they're also forming opinions. There's also a well of wisdom in these years that most adults don't listen to, and that they're not taking seriously the thoughts and opinions coming from this age group. You know, it's like... it's one of the things I think that really can bother a kid when they're not being taken seriously, when they're expressing someone and an adult's attitude is, well, what do you know? You're just 11 years old.
Right. You're just
an 11-year-old today knows a lot.
They know a lot. And they, given the chance, are more than willing to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because developmentally at this age, they really don't have a lot of gray areas in their life. Things are black and white. You're either my friend or you're not my friend. You're either really cool or you're your dork. And there's
right.
no real gray areas, and that's because they just haven't reached that stage of growth yet where they have a chance to look at things and say, well, maybe there's an edge of gray in here. So they are very strong in their opinions. They're very clear about what they like, what they don't like, what they're willing to do, what they're not willing to do. And that's why there are so many power struggles that come up between parents and kids at this age.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we get into that issue, because I think that's another important thing, I want to remind my listeners that this is a live call-in show. And if you're in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310 in the greater Phoenix area. Feel free to call in if you have a question or a comment for myself or for Patty Hansen. If you're listening via the Internet, as I know some of you are, it's also the same number. It's a toll call, but with today's specials and rates, it's not an expensive call, 480-949-1310. So let's get back to your last point. I think that one way to really help children formulate and mature their ideas and thoughts is to listen to them and to take them seriously and not to give them that attitude, like I said earlier, what do you know, you're just a kid type of thing, but to give them an opportunity to express themselves and try on different things that are not necessarily in agreement with the parents. Now, a lot of parents, I think, feel threatened when their kids come up with thoughts and ideas that don't match theirs, and they just chalk it up to rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the rebellious stuff of the preteen. That where do you think it comes from, and how does your book maybe help that situation for the kids?
I don't think it's unusual for kids this age for parents of kids this age to view their kids as being rebellious. I think that is a normal occurrence during this age group. But what I think happens to parents is that maybe A, they overreact and try and squash that attitude. They call it attitude, you know, you don't get this attitude with me. And not realize that this is a proper developmental stage. The kids need to do this. But instead of fighting with them about it and trying to make them be the little kid that they were again, to embrace and celebrate this change in their life, I can see that you have a differing opinion than me. That shows to me as a parent that you as a child are evolving. You're growing up. And I'm really glad that's happening for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to have more discussions with you, and we have a chance to talk about things. But I think parents get stumped sometimes because they'll say to their kids, let's use a normal example. Both parents probably work. The kid comes home from school. They're supposed to do their homework, or they play soccer or whatever. Everybody gets together if they're lucky. A lot of kids say they don't ever get to eat dinner with their parents. But, you know, say there's some time in the evening that they see each other. Well, how was school? Fine. What happened? Nothing. How's your grades? Okay. How's your teacher? All right. What's going on with your friends? Nothing. These are the kinds of conversations that parents tend to have with their kids at this age because the kids don't want to seem to be weak and have to lean on their parents. So they start closing down that end, and they share all this stuff with their best friends or their friends. The best way to open up conversation again is to go to a non-threatening area, which would be a story from a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if parents use my book or they don't use my book. That's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing they can do is to find something that their kids are willing to read with them that revolves around issues that these kids are facing. So they can read it together, or they can say, I'm going to read this first. And then I want you to read it, and tomorrow night we're going to sit down for 15 minutes with each other, and we're going to talk about that story.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes a non-threatening, non-confrontational place for a parent and a kid to talk about something that's happening to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Much like if you were going to watch television together, but then you don't have that high degree of stimulation that television creates. It
Right.
creates a calming effect. It gives you a chance to breathe together, a chance to really see each other, look at each other when you're talking about these issues. And I'll tell you what, I have parents write to me and say, I can't believe the change in the relationship that we have with each other now.
Mm-hmm.
And
I really think that, you know, taking it to another level is one way to add to that would be to take turns reading a story to one another out loud. One of the things that my cousins Bill and Hinda do with their preteens, although Zach is already 13 and their daughter is 11 or 12, is they watch, every Friday night, they watch Joan of Arcadia together as a family.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
when it's over, the TV goes off, and they talk about the issues and the story and their reactions and everything
mm-hmm.
else. I was so blown away when I heard that they did this. There are some really good quality things on TV that can lead to the same thing.
Absolutely.
And again, books like yours, and there are others out there, but yours, I think, takes it and gives you little snippets. You know, it's like two or three pages that can really open up a whole evening's worth of discussion. Or days
Absolutely.
Worth of discussion.
Absolutely. And if there are issues that are facing every single preteen that's on this planet today. It's not just this country. I mean, we get stuff from kids all over the world, and they face the same issues and challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty exciting when kids can sit down and read something by a peer. It's not an adult preaching to them or telling them how they should feel or what they should think or what they should do. It's another kid that said, I did this, I came through this, this happened to me, and now I'm on the other end, and I'm sharing with you how I felt about it, like the one you read.
Well, the other thing, one of the other things that I really, that brought this book really brought home to me as a therapist is that most parents, it's not just that they don't understand their kids, but there's an element of fear that starts emerging in parents as their kids start getting older. Part of the fear is that they themselves are getting older, that their kids aging is an indication that they're getting older, that maybe they grew up in a household where communication wasn't really established and they don't know how to do it themselves, because it's usually where we learn our relationship skills and our parenting skills.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to admit that and to look for a vehicle and a tool like Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul or any of the Chicken Soup books is a good way for an adult or a parent that's really feeling a lot of anxiety about their adequacy as parents to be able to make use and draw on someone else's vehicle as a way of, in a sense, revisiting some of their own issues along with their kids.
And it makes them more real to their kids, too.
Mm-hmm.
It does, because like you were talking about the story and what it brought up for you were the feelings that you had when you were going through something that was similar. All of us have gone through the same developmental issues that our kids face,
mm-hmm.
maybe at different times, at different levels, but we've gone through the same things. Friends backstabbing, or, you know, maybe falling in love with a boy in the fifth grade and just thinking you were going to die unless he paid attention to you, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
We've all felt that way. And if you as a parent say, oh, when your kid says to you, well, do you really like this guy, if they're willing to share that kind of stuff with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, oh, I remember when I felt like that, they look at you like, sure you do. You know, you weren't ever that age.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can take it to a different level where it's not about you and it's not about your child, but it's about a story, it's about another person relating their story, it creates this sort of common ground for you to relate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes easier to share your own experiences, and it's not a polarization between the two of you. Well, that's my experience. No, that's my experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, it's also not just that your kids start, you know, realizing that you were their age at one point. It's a reminder that you were their age at one point. You know, it's just kind of...
Yeah,
kind of getting
it is.
You back to you know, being a bit more sensitive and understanding, and maybe remembering that what you needed at that time was mom or dad to be a bit more patient with you, and maybe for you to step back and take a breath and be a bit more patient with them.
Right. I mean, as an adult, you can look at a kid and they say, oh, my God, I've got this horrible pimple on my forehead. I can't go to school today because, you know, everybody's going to make fun of me. And we look at our kid and we go, oh, yeah, right. That's
mm-hmm.
the silliest thing I've ever heard of from our point of view, because we have to go to work no matter what. But when you were 11 and that was happening, that was a major thing. That was a major thing.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, there was one story that I read about this boy that his mother wouldn't let him pierce his ear, so he decided to do it himself. And because he had long hair, he was able to hide it for like a month until he ended up being interviewed on a news story about the football team. And all of a sudden, there was this glaring stud sticking on the TV showing that he had pierced his ear. And he started running up the stairs thinking he was going to get, like, really hammered by mom and dad. And mom sort of tackled him and questioned him on it, and both of them really started laughing because she really kind of liked it. And he realized that, but she also said, you did disobey me, so you are grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But he really got that, you know, there can be a meeting of the minds, and that it really joined him and his mom much closer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got to do his rebound. You know, she didn't take it so serious about he disobeyed me, and she didn't feel threatened by it.
Yeah, and it gives the kids a chance to realize that their parents are human beings, too.
Right.
The other way back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's any way you look at it, it's a great tool to use to better your communication with your kids, if you still choose to do that.
Right. I kind of got the feeling reading that story that what mom was, that was going, I was maybe projecting, but what mom was thinking at that time was remembering a little bit of her own rebellion as a kid and couldn't take this to heart, you know.
Probably.
So I want to read one more piece here, and it's in the section on choices, and it's called Angel. And it goes like this. 2 days before my birthday, I got an email that would first make me cry and then make me smile. Patrick was a kid that I knew from 4-H. We became friends when I taught him how to show horses, and he showed my horse in the junior division at the county horse show. We weren't close friends, But he was a pretty cool guy. I mean, how many guys like to show horses and will let a girl teach them how to do it? Not very many. After the horse show and his leaving the club, we kind of lost contact. He sent me a Christmas card with his email address in it, but I put off emailing him. I thought, how much stuff would we be able to talk about anyway? His email address was in my address book, and when I changed servers, my new address went to everyone on my list. A few days later, I got a reply from Patrick. It was brief. He asked me how I was and told me that he was starting riding lessons again. He also asked me how Theo, my horse, was, and he gave me his email address. He ended with, "Hope you have a nice day, Patrick." I replied to his email, just small talk, and my email looked something like this, quote, "Hi, nice to hear from you. That's so cool you're taking lessons. I'm really sorry that I didn't email you at all during the winter. School has been pretty busy for me this year. Theo is doing well. He still knocks my radio off the stall door when I have the music on too loud. You'll have to come out and visit sometime." A few more lines ended my email. When his came back, he had some questions for me. And his was quoted, "That's cool. What kind of music do you listen to? I like country. Do you like hunting?" Turns out country music is the only thing I will listen to, and hunting is one of my favorite pastimes. I had no idea we had so much in common. I thought, this is cool. We actually like the same stuff. Those emails were the start of a two-month correspondence that covered a wide variety of subjects. Having a lot in common made it easy to just chat. And to tell you the truth, I enjoyed getting his emails. Toward the end of June, I wrote him a reply to an email I had received 4 days earlier from him. I felt bad about not getting back to him right away, and my email wasn't much more than a note. But what I got back from him took my breath away. Patrick's email was short. He started off by telling me he was going to be on vacation for 3 weeks and other stuff like that. But the postscript is what got to me. It read, "P.S. I really wanted to say thank you for talking to me through email. I'm usually really shy, and I'm afraid to tell people what my likes are and all. Plus, I really have been bored since school let out. Emailing you, at least I can talk to someone. You like everything I like so far, and as long as I have lived, I have never met anyone so much like me. I've been used to a lot of people picking on me, and I've been pretty down the past few years." When I read that people picked on him, my thoughts were, why in the world are kids so mean? Don't they realize how they are making him feel? It broke my heart to hear him say that he had been down the past few years. I actually started crying when I read how the other kids treated him. It was then that I understood that Patrick was a kid who had needed a friend. My taking the time to email him had made him feel important, like someone really cared enough to talk to him instead of just picking on him. "I want to thank you again. You like just about everything I like, hunting, cars, country music, horses. To me, you're like an angel." Those last six words touched my heart. It made me feel so good I just can't explain it. No one had ever said anything that nice to me before. To be called an angel just made my day. When I emailed him back, I sincerely thanked him for what he had said and told him to hang on. That day, I learned a lesson that would stay with me for the rest of my life. From now on, I will take the time to do the little things, like replying to an email or card, even if it's just a line or two. You never know how you might help someone and become his or her angel. And that was written by Jenna Pallone, who's 16 years old.
Yeah, she's a really cool girl. I had quite a lengthy phone conversation with her about the story before we published it, because we had to get permission from the boy involved, too, whether or not he would allow us to have the story printed in. And really nice, sweet, wonderful girl.
How did the boy react to being asked that?
He, at first he was a little bit embarrassed because he didn't know that she really had written the story, and so we sent it to him, and he read it, and he said, you know, no, it's a good idea because it might help some other kids that are going through what I went through to know that you have to reach out sometimes to somebody and let them know that you need to have a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think that happens with a lot of kids is they wait for somebody else to reach out to them and they're not willing to reach out first and say, hey, I do need a friend. I need somebody to talk to, and and I appreciate it when you do.
Definitely. So, you know, again, we get back to the wisdom of these kids. I mean, you know, there are a lot of these kids that, you know, if you want to use the word old souls, there are many people who may be chronologically very young, but have a level of wisdom and ability to express it and an insightfulness and intuitiveness that really far surpasses what a lot of adults are capable of.
I very much believe that, especially after reading as many pieces of literature or stories or letters or poems that the kids send in. I totally believe that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are two touchy areas that I really want to get into before the end of the show.
Okay.
One we talked about yesterday and has to do with the formulation. We talked earlier about how much input kids are getting in the news and what's going on in the world and, you know, recent elections and all this other stuff. And they may not be old enough to vote, but it doesn't mean they're not old enough to have opinions or have feelings about what's going on in their world and how politics and politicians affect that. And yet many of them feel like, well, you know, I can't vote, so what can I do? And yet there are a lot of kids, you know, I think there was a group called Kids for Kerry, and I'm sure that there was, you know, the Young Republicans and things like that. There are a lot of kids that are conscious and involved. And, you know, how does all this play out in political fields, and what can you say to parents to allow them to start formulating their own political opinions?
Well, I think the first thing we need to realize as parents is that they are human beings with their own distinct personalities and their right to have their own opinions and to be respectful as one human being to another, to give them that right from one heart to another. Also, when your child expresses an opinion about something, to encourage them to express more of their opinions and to get involved with different organizations in the area or in your community. Anytime your child says anything about, gee, I wish it was different, or why doesn't somebody do something about that, that's a chance for you as an adult to jump right in and say, well, why don't we see if we can find something for you to do that would help you participate in that kind of an area.
Excellent.
That are charity-based organizations that are more than willing to have kids participate. A lot of kids, preteen kids, have started their own organizations because they couldn't find something that fit what they wanted to do, and they've made huge differences. There was one boy in Kids Soul that when he was in eighth grade, he noticed that all of the school cafeteria food was thrown away after school, and he wanted to do something to help the homeless people, so he started an organization that came and collected the food after it was left every single day. That, you know, whatever hadn't been served or hadn't been touched, and had it delivered to the local homeless shelters. That was an eighth grade boy that did that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a girl in this book that, when she read an article about the Afghani girls not having desks in the schools because they had just been allowed to go back to school, she went to her school and put together a whole drive to have the desks that they had, their school was getting rid of, sent to Afghanistan. Not only did she serve Afghanistan with this, but Haiti as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in seventh grade. So what we as parents need to recognize is that these kids can make a huge and powerful difference if we're willing to give that to them and to be respectful of the power that they've got and help them when they need the help.
And not tell them that they're crazy for thinking that, because there's a lot of adults that feel that sense of hopelessness and pass it on to their kids. And when the kids themselves are seeing beyond the hopelessness and into possibility and into their own involvement, it's sometimes difficult for the parents to get what these kids are doing and to really be an encouragement, because some of the parents are already in that dark space of hopelessness already.
Right. And maybe what they need to do is just realize that this is a different world than the world that they lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And just because their parents said to them, you're just a kid, you can't do it, doesn't mean that their kid can't do it.
Mm-hmm. I think the phrase, yes, you can, needs to be practiced by all parents and taught to their kids.
I believe that preteen kids can make the biggest difference on this planet
mm-hmm.
because they're not swayed by no very easily.
Right.
They like we were talking about before, they're very opinionated. Once they've formed an opinion, they're pretty clear about the fact that they can do something. And with a little bit of support, they can make a huge, huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Ask any marketing expert. They market directly to this age group.
Yep.
They know what... And it's too bad that the rest of us don't recognize the power that these kids have.
Well, I think your book really helps do that. Now, there's one other delicate area that that is a difficult thing for most parents to talk to their kids about and difficult for most kids to even ask about, and that has to do with sex and sexuality and the things that are beginning to awaken in them as preteens and as puberty approaches, but also I think because of the impact that the media and the marketing people are already putting into them. Like you said, they're growing up faster. I think even, you know, cosmetics are already being marketed to preteens, and the way a lot of the singers are already dressing is also setting a tone for preteens and how they're dressing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel as a parent have a healthy sense of who they are sexually and sexuality-wise?
Well, I encourage parents to not have their girls be very aggressive when it comes to dressing, like some of the pop artists and things like that.
Right.
Because I feel that the kids themselves feel like they're pressured to do that by the market, by the clothing companies, by people who are trying to sell them things. And I don't think it really comes from them themselves. I think given the choice to dress more appropriately for an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old, they would choose that over a real low-slung or very revealing outfit. I don't really think that the kids feel comfortable with that.
Well, I think they're still so self-conscious about their bodies and the changes that I think most of them are more comfortable not showing it off.
And they would be more comfortable if they had a parent that said, no, you're not going to buy that because it's not appropriate for you. When you're a teenager, we can talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of parents just cave in because the kids think they should dress like that because everybody tells them they should.
Mm-hmm.
They tell their parents, I want to buy that outfit. And the parents cave because they think the kid really wants it.
Well, I think the parents also are saying, well, I guess this is the norm today. You know, like when we were growing up and, you know, I hate to age myself, but when the Beatles finally arrived in the country and people started growing their hair long, you know, all of our parents were really like, you know, you're not getting your hair that long. You're going to get a haircut and all this over the length of hair, for God's sakes, you know. But that's what was going on at the time. That was the big conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain point, even parents started accepting it. And I think with the drasticness of, like you're saying, styles and input and constant media input, you know, sometimes I think parents just surrender to it, mm-hmm. assuming that they're supposed to be cool enough to let their kids do this.
And it's okay for a parent not to be cool.
Uh-huh.
And that's a real good example for kids, too. It's okay as a parent to say no, and it's okay to say that's not appropriate. And it's really important to set guidelines and boundaries. We've got a story that is going in our next book that I'm working on right now, Chicken Soup for the Girl's Soul, about a girl who was jealous about her cousin who parents never set boundaries and didn't make her to go to bed on time, and she got to stay up late and she got to wear whatever she wanted, and this girl comes to stay overnight with her one night, and the girl's saying, I wish my parents loved me as much as your parents do. She's saying, what are you talking about? You get to do anything you want. She says, yeah, I get to do anything I want, but I don't really feel like they love me because that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your mom cares about what time you go to bed and what you eat and what is going on in your life and what you're wearing, and my parents couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids really do want, and this age group, they want those kinds of boundaries set for them. They want to feel safe, and they want to feel loved, and they want to spend time with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
We get so many letters from kids saying, I would just wish my parents weren't so busy. I wish they didn't both work. I wish that we had dinners together. I wish that they would just hang out with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe that just means sitting around for an afternoon and not doing anything.
Right.
You're just there for them.
Yeah. And to realize that being cool, like you said, is not the important thing. Being their friend is not necessarily the healthiest thing when they're wanting a parent.
They're going to have a lot of friends in their lives, and they're going to get one set of parents if they're lucky. Maybe sometimes their kids are lucky enough to get two or three sets of parents, but at least they know those are parents and that friends are somebody else other than a parent. A parent is a person that's supposed to set an example, be a good communicator, be a great support system, and kids so appreciate it. Family is a huge thing for them. The love and the support of a family in the preteen years is the one thing that they cherish the most. And they may not let you know that, but that's what's going on inside their hearts. Because they write to us and tell us.
Right. I want to give you an opportunity, Patty, to talk about your website, preteenplanet.com.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What does it do? How are the kids making use of it?
Well, it evolved because during our production of Chicken Soup for the Kids Soul, we recognized that we really didn't have enough room on the Chicken Soup website for all the stuff we wanted to have on there and all the things the kids wanted to see. So I created it's a website for kids 9 to 13. It has a monitored chat room, so there's an adult there watching to see what kind of stuff they're doing, and they get kicked off if they act inappropriately. Because there's a lot of chat rooms that kids can go to, and if they want to act out, they can do that there, but they can't do it on our site. So
how do you monitor that?
It's a software program where we actually have a monitor that watches every single entry. And if the kids enter something that's inappropriate,
like certain words get highlighted or something.
Well, the software actually picks up the words that we tell it to. It just puts gobbledygook up there instead of the word.
Huh.
But the kids get smart. I mean, they spell things out and put dots between them, and, you know, they do all kinds of stuff. So what we do is what we call is banning. They're banned from the site until the following day. So they cannot sign back on into the chat room again.
Mm-hmm. Like a timeout.
It's like a timeout.
Yeah.
It's exactly that.
That's great.
So the kids who want to really have conversation with each other in a safe place, they can come and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have what we call blab boards, which are message boards, and we ask prompting questions that the kids can post their responses to. And we've got an online newspaper. The kids review current movies and music and fashion and all that stuff, and they post their opinions. There's a place called, VIP, Very Important Preteen, where the kids can post questions that are, you know, maybe things that they want opinions on from their peer group, you know, like this boy at school likes me and he's my best friend's boyfriend and now he seems to like me, what should I do? Then they post that question and the other kids can go on and answer it. So kids who have similar things going on in their lives, there's answers right there for them.
And how much traffic is the site getting?
We're getting about 100,000 kids a month right now.
Wow.
That's
so encouraging.
Well, it is.
Places they have been and could be going.
Yeah, it's encouraging to me because it shows me that we really have a solid base of kids. It's discouraging when I see some other sites that just have only games and they get 3 million a month, you know, and I think,
mm-hmm.
Oh, holy cow. But
right.
We're small. I mean, it's a small operation. We have one person that's, you know, basically the webmaster, but we care about what's up there and we care about supporting the kids. And it's got a lot of resources. It's got homework help and it's got games and we've got everything. We've got everything. I love it. I go on.
Stimulation and activity too, which I know is important to the kids. So we have just about a minute left, and I really want to take some time to thank you, Patty, so much for your books as well as the time you took today to educate us and maybe open some ears and eyes and hearts to the plight and joys of being a preteen. And I want to remind people that Chicken Soup for the Preteen Soul 1 and 2 are out there. In fact, Preteen 2 I'm sending to my niece, actually, for Hanukkah. And if you want to reach Patty, you can reach her at patty@preteenplanet.com. Or if you didn't write that down, you can more easily remember going to the website for my show, tellthetruthfaster.com. And you can email me or Patty via that. And you can also, if you want someone to listen to the show in about a week or so, it'll be archived along with all the other shows I've done over the last 3 years, any topic.